Howdy, friends, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And joining me today is a special guest. It's the wild man, Kyle Filson. Kyle, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. The weather is perfect here. It really is. It's a perfect day.
We got to get the show wrapped up. We got to get outside.
Right?
That's all we got to do. We got to get ready to do some kayak fishing. I appreciate all the videos. I posted a few videos of some great white shark stuff. And then there's a really cool video online now of some dudes. I'm going to say Australia because the ship's captain is 100% Australian. And they're like marlin fishing. They got a big marlin on. I mean, I think they say they estimate the weight around 600 pounds. They're towards the end of the video. But the dude's like, reel it up. He's like, reel it up, mate. You're done. The dude's like, what do you mean? He goes, I can see the blood. And that marlin was going, the great whites mauled it down there. When they finally get, and it's, they finally get what's, they bring the head on board is all they get. And the head's huge. I mean, it's, this coming from a guy with a big head. This head on this fish is big. But the shark's done whooped its ass. So, yeah.
It's shocking to me that you enjoy kayak fishing, but you're so terrified of the ocean.
I'm not in the water. I'm on top of the water.
Yeah, but it don't take much before you to be in the
water. We're not going to discuss that either, because when I start thinking about it, it's like you're not afraid of heights if you don't look down.
Right? Well, I'm going to tell you, with the nice weather that we're experiencing and the recent addition, I was recently added to this Facebook group by our buddy Jason Pentrell. And, man, I see all the photos of all these sharks' teeth and different fossils that these people are finding. It makes me want to get out and start exploring and doing some more fossil finding.
I've never found a complete arrowhead. I've found broken ones. But out of all my time in the outdoors, I've never found a complete one.
I have found one, but it wasn't a real good one. You could tell it probably was somebody practicing their
somebody's kid built
or
it.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to do it now, like you said. After following that, we got to do it. I don't even know where to start. I guess we need to start doing some research. There's some places around here we could go on up and down on the rivers. We need to do it, man. This spring and summer, let's me and you go do that.
I want to drive up to North Carolina and go where those guys
right?
are going.
I would love to find my own shark's tooth.
Well, we'll have to make plans to do that. Well, we got an interesting show today.
Yeah, we're going to come see you, Jason. We're going to come up there and we're going to do some fossil hunting.
Yeah, pretty cool. We got an interesting show today. We're going to be speaking with friends of ours, Dave and David, of the Blurry Photos podcast. But before we get with those guys, let's get into the news. Did you see this, Cam? I know you're a big fan of the show Vikings.
I think I may be heathen.
Right? Yeah, I definitely agree with you. People should check that out. If you like Game of Thrones and things like that, there's a series on Hulu. It was done on the History Channel called Vikings. Very, very interesting show. But anyways, this kind of fits in with this. Iceland, have you seen this, is about to build the first temple to Norse gods in 1,000 years. They say that modern versions of Norse paganism has been gaining popularity in Iceland.
Praise Odin.
Right? And they say Icelanders will soon be able to publicly worship at a shrine to Thor, Odin, and Frigg with the construction of this starting this month on the island's first major temple to the Norse gods since the Viking Age. And they say worship of the gods in Scandinavia gave way to Christianity around 1,000 years ago, but a modern version of Norse paganism has been gaining a lot of popularity in Iceland recently. And they say that there's about 2,400 members now, and 2,400 members doesn't sound like a lot, but you got to remember the total population of Iceland is only 330,000.
And I thought there was more than that.
No.
They
said that the temple will be circular and that it will be dug 13 feet down into a hill overlooking the Icelandic capital of Reykjavik with a dome on top of it to let sunlight in. They say the sun changes with the seasons, so we are in a way having the sun paint the space for us. They say the temple will host ceremonies like weddings and funerals, and the group will also have a special ceremony to initiate teenagers, which is very similar to other religions and stuff. So very cool that Norse paganism is actually on the rise.
They're staying old school. They're keeping it old school back there.
Right? Very, very cool.
Hey, I saw this online, and of course, instantly, my silly crypto mind jumped to this. We talk about how animals could stay hidden and how people are always like, man, it'd be hard. It'd be hard for a giant ape to stay hidden in the woods, or,
right,
you know, and things like that. This actually comes from newscientist.com. There's an Atlas Altash, I suppose, National Park. Anyway, they said there was a hidden population of up to 200 lions, 200, Kyle, found in the remote Ethiopia.
Now, they didn't know that they existed there?
Well, I think here's what it says. It says the remote part of northwest Ethiopia was considered as a possible habitat for lions, but it was seldom visited by people. Now there's an expedition going on by the University of Oxford's Conservation Research Unit because it is discovered that lions are indeed alive and well in the park, and it's a rare extension to their known range. Hans Bauer, now he's the one that's leading this expedition, says, during my professional career, I have had to revise the lion distribution map many times. I have deleted one population after the other. This is the first and probably the last time that I'm putting up a new one up there. So he's like, he can't believe it. Now, he said to spot them, they started putting up camera traps on these dry riverbeds. And this is what Hans goes on to say. He says, while I was walking to find some trees to put the camera on, I already saw footprints. And that was the eureka moment when I was sure that there really are lions in this area. Now, it says this then, it was a case of catching them, of course, on film to prove that, you know, that they were there. Well, Altash, they say, is it adjacent to a much larger national park there in the Sudan, the Dinder National Park. And Bauer believes it's likely that there are lions there as well, with perhaps 100 to 200 individuals in that park.
Wow, so that's a lot of lions.
It is. Now, I didn't know this. There's 20,000 lions left in the wild across Africa. Said lion populations in West and Central Africa are declining and may actually cut in half in the next, like, 20 years.
Not a bad thing. Not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, that's
people,
me.
They want to protect animals, but, you know, realize those are monsters.
Those are monsters. Exactly. But that's neat to me is, like, they're like, well, there's no really lions in there, so nobody ever goes to look. But wouldn't that be where they would go for safety, where nobody goes to look?
You would think.
That would be the perfect idea to hide.
And here's another thing. It's probably well known to the natives there.
I'm sure
they're
it is.
Like, yeah, they've always been here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's why we don't go in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's what I was like, you know what? Right there's another point. It's not like you're, you know, there's 20 or 30 things trying to hide in this big area. 100 to 200, they believe, is in that area.
That's a lot
of big cats, man.
Yeah. Cam, have you yourself ever wanted to reach out to potential life outside of our solar system? Have you ever thought about that? Would you like to send a message to perhaps an extraterrestrial race of some
Hell
kind?
Hell no. And the reason being is because they don't need to know we're here.
Right.
I don't like the idea of what we sent into space years ago that shows our makeup and our DNA chain. I'm like, that's a really big, if you were going to attack and destroy something, it'd be like, here, you're going to break into this house. Let me mail you the blueprint of this house to give you a good idea of what it looks like before you break into it.
Right. Well, a lot of people, I mean, even Stephen Hawking has mentioned that it doesn't think it's a good idea for us to be broadcasting.
It's not.
You know, you're like telling people.
Yeah.
Speaking of like the show Vikings, I mean, what is this extraterrestrial race? Just like that, that see the message and be like, hey, we didn't know that was there. Let's go there. And then what do?
Okay, easy. These guys are to kill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you did want to send a message, here's your chance. There's a new project that'll beam people's text-based messages into space at light speed later this year.
This has got bad news written all over it. The hate from trolls on YouTube. Can you imagine what it's going to be like to tweet messages into space?
Right. Now, they're going to send these towards the North Star or Polaris, and it'll reach the star in 434 years. Now, a guy named Paul Quast from the University of Edinburgh College of Art in Scotland says that this project will create a culturally inspired message in a bottle, capturing global perspectives that will travel into space for eons. Now, this message, or these messages, they'll be transmitted as radio signals, and the researchers hope that they'll form something of a time capsule that will reveal insights into how we feel about our own environment at this crucial point in our history. Now, this isn't the first time, like you were mentioning, that researchers have sent messages into space. Now, back in 1974, they sent something called the Arecibo message, which was broadcast as a bunch of ones and zeros towards Messier 13, which is a star cluster. Now, the three-minute binary transmission was put together by Frank Drake and Carl Sagan, and they contained a whole lot of encoded information about our DNA, a graphic image of the human body, and the map of the solar system and where we're located in it. But since then, there's been a range of other projects that have been beamed as radio waves into the distance, you know, towards planets and other stars. This has mostly been done in the aim of providing a way of intercepting extraterrestrial intelligence with crucial insights into humanity. But this new project, titled A Simple Response, is a little different because its aim isn't really to speak to life outside our planet, although there's always the possibility that that could happen. Instead, the researchers are hoping that the messages will help them actually understand more about how people around the world think about climate change, regardless of geography or background. And to that end, the project is asking people to answer a simple question. How will our present environmental interactions shape the future? Now, they say the results will be compiled and beamed into interstellar space. The results will be compiled and beamed into interstellar space as radio waves in August of this year. Now, here's a neat thing. The fact that radio waves travel at the speed of light, they say that within 21 hours of the transmission, the signal will already have traveled deeper into space than one of our most famous message carriers, the Voyager 1, which was launched in 1977. So in 21 hours, it'll pass the Voyager. Isn't that crazy?
I hope they're not going to be sending messages of B.O.B. talking about the flat Earth, and then that's really really going to get railroaded in by extraterrestrials.
Well, if you want to leave an interstellar message, you can go to a Simple Response website. I'll put links to it in the show notes, or you can just go to asimplerespondents.org, and you can share your message, and it'll be sent out into interstellar space for others to read or another life. Very cool.
Well, I got you something here that's kind of interesting, and you and I discussed this, oh my goodness, years ago. Way before we even thought about a podcast, we had talked about this. And it's finally, and I've heard people talk about it back and forth, and I never knew if it was real. I kind of assumed maybe it was, and this, that, and the other. Turns out, it's from The Guardian, turns out mammoth meat was never served at the 1950s New York dinner. There's a researcher that's looked into this.
Really?
Says it was never served. They said the woolly tale about Explorers Club soiree falls over his leftover goblet. Turns out to be sea turtle. After the 21st century DNA analysis.
So they were serving this as mammoth meat, it was just sea turtle?
Sounds like that may have been it was. It says, woolly mammoth was never served at a lavish 1950s New York dinner where rare and extinct species were trumpeted as being on the menu. A researcher has said after putting leftover meat through DNA analysis. And like we said, it was a big party that the Explorers Club put on, and they said that it was supposed to include on the menu 250,000-year-old extinct mammoth. Well, we already know that they were finding some that haven't been dead near that long. There was also meat from the giant ground sloth was promised, but they said that there was a fist-sized piece of meat kept as a souvenir that was actually given for DNA analysis, and it was shown to be sea turtle. Now, Jessica Glass is a Yale graduate student and the co-lead author of a study published in this journal, PLOS-1. And she said that, I'm sure people wanted to believe it, and that they had no idea that many years later a PhD student would come along to figure this out with DNA sequencing techniques. But right. It goes on. It is neat that, like we said, this has been a whole big story. And even it says that it says that some of the folklore about mammoth being on the menu apparently actually grew out of a Christian Science Monitor story that ran days after the January of 1951 event.
Well, they actually have seen videos of actual wolves eating mammoth meat that's coming up through the permafrost.
Exactly.
And stuff.
Well, I think that's what it was supposed to be, you know, taken as, is that they had grabbed a piece and then they had taken it and then they were going to cook it and all this stuff. But it turns out there's a lot more to this story, as they did a lot of DNA and they talk about the mindset of people at that time and things like that. And they actually even show this, what was supposed to be. Now, here's what it was. This jar of meat that these people had saved, this big chunk of stuff these people, I guess, had stuck in their napkin and wrapped it up and put it in their purse. Like, you wouldn't, there's leftovers, put it in your purse. But it was not just mammoth, but some people said it could have been mammoth or the giant sloth is what it was believed. One of the two. Turns out it was just turtle. So, but I mean, with that being said, how easy would that be to say, hey, look, I'm going to be serving mammoth. I'm going to charge y'all $1,000 a plate. And I'm going to give you little square pieces of mammoth meat that I've gotten from them. And you just serve something. I mean, how many people aside from, you know, at least here in the States, aside from Cajuns, I've had turtle soup, but I've never had like the meat, you know, like it was a broth is kind of what I had. But I never got the whole meal of eating it. But aside from some other textured meat that you may not really be familiar with, you wouldn't know.
No.
You know, like
they do it all the time. I'm quite sure that I've probably eaten domestic cat or something at a restaurant. Or,
some of the restaurants we've stopped in have
been a
little shady. I like
street vendors, and I've had some really strange meat before. Yeah. But, you know, hey, it was definitely much easier to do a long time ago than it is now.
Well, yeah, but that's what it is. I mean, you could easily do all this and tell everybody they were eating mammoth until you had somebody look into it. But it is funny. So this whole story, it ends there, that there was no mammoth. Now, that's what they don't really get into is mammoth meat, it says, was never served. How do they know? Maybe they didn't have a lot of it.
Right. Maybe the piece they tested.
It's not mammoth, obviously, but maybe mammoth was still there. To say you're not there and you've not tested every meat that was there. So to say without a doubt, That was it. You really can't. You can say the piece you tested that this person alleged they were told was mammoth, was sea turtle. That's pretty much as far as you can really go with this.
Pretty cool, man. Well, before we take our first break, I'd just like to say that the year 2016 isn't doing us any more favors. More good people are dying. And recently, our fellow Texan, Dr. Edgar Mitcher, passed away. You know, the Apollo 14 astronaut, the one who spoke out about Roswell and the existence of aliens. If you remember, I remember him talking about, well, he was saying when they were testing things out there at the White Sands Missile Range there near Roswell, that he saw extraterrestrials observing them, watching what they were doing. And I used to think it was a crazy story, but I still talk about, and I've probably mentioned it before, I have a great uncle who was a fighter pilot in World War II, and he told me when he was in New Mexico, I don't remember what base it was exactly, but that they had seen these flying orbs and stuff. He's like, yeah, I've seen them.
So, and he acted like it was no big deal. Like everybody, he's like, yeah, they all kind of knew this.
So Edgar Mitchell, what a great man. You know, he's the sixth man to ever walk on the moon. He's passed away. I'm going to miss that guy.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Well, let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. We got some pretty important guests on the show with us today. Cam, what do you think?
They're really good friends of ours. That's what I think. I love these guys.
I do too.
Yeah, from the Windy City, from Chirac.
Yeah, right.
Siberia.
Yeah, right.
Right. It's the Blurry Photos guys, David Flora and Dave Stecco. They had us on their show graciously back in October, I believe, around the middle of October. And we were going to have them on, but we got kind of busy. So we finally got around to it, and now we're here. And we're going to talk to these guys. I find their show hilarious. They do similar things to Expanded Perspectives, similar topics, that is, at least. You know, whether it's cryptids or Tales of Time Slips or, you know, Aleister Crowley to whatever, you know. And they do it in a new and a different way that I've never found another show that does it quite like they do. And that's what I find entertaining. And I think a lot of you are going to find their show entertaining. So first off, guys, how's the weather up there?
It is nicer than we have any right to.
Yeah. Any right to for the beginning of
February. it's like a balmy mid-40s. It's kind of a light jacket weather.
Yeah, people got shorts on, they're going nuts outside.
Yeah, I mean, luckily it looks like the East Coast has been hammered pretty recently, but we've had really nice weather down here too, which is usually this time of year it's pretty cold down here. I mean,
yeah.
What is that, like 50 degrees? Is that,
yeah.
Take the pets in?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, 50 degrees.
That's break out the parka?
We've probably got one good ice storm coming. We always get hit with some really good ice storm in February, usually every year. And it's not snow as much as we wish it was. It's like real ice. So nobody goes anywhere for like 3 days. And then everybody gets back out, but everybody treats it like it's the zombie apocalypse. So we know we got that coming. So
it's very disappointing. You look out the window as a kid, and you see snow everywhere, and you run out, and it's hard as concrete. You're like, no!
You run out, you can't stop. You just go right
slip,
the tree.
Crack a hip. Kyle breaks his coccyx.
Again.
We get one of those. We get like one real good hit every year, and I don't feel like we've gotten ours just yet.
No.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
It's
cool.
Been a weird winter, so we'll see how it turns out for us.
Right?
But so far, so good. It's been easy, easy riding.
Well, could you tell us a little bit about yourselves and also about your podcast, Blurry Photos? I even like the name. I mean, it always reminds me of the Mitch Hedberg joke.
Is it Sasquatch that's actually
just blurry?
Just blurry. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I'm David Flora. I am originally from Kentucky. I've actually been living in Chicago for about 10 years now. Moved up here to do acting and improv and that kind of stuff, just see what hit. Nothing really stuck. Kind of the don't quit your day job kind of thing. Obviously, and if you listen to our show, you can probably tell why. But I got into this as a kid with just looking at reading books on mythology, like Greek mythology, Norse mythology. That kind of opened the door up. And then I used to collect those monsters in my pocket. I don't know if you guys have ever.
Yeah, I remember those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're just little rubber cryptids, basically. And that, you know, kind of opened the door a little wider. And then it's just this kind of stuff, the Fortean topics and supernatural phenomena always just has been stuck in my craw. For lack of a better term, it's always been something that interests me. So Yeah, that's why we came to or why I came to this.
Yeah, I same here. I grew up reading books about just weird stuff that you get at the library. I've mentioned this on our podcast a few times. There's a book I had when I was in elementary school called America's Very Own Monsters that just blew my mind. And it had, Sasquatch and Skunk Apes and the Goat Man and Mothman and the Jersey Devil and all those things. And it expanded my perspectives. Is what it did. I moved out to Chicago about 10 years ago myself. And, I'm kind of a rambly guy. I like to find something that I think is interesting and then just chase that down. And I had done that in Colorado and abroad for a while and decided, oh, maybe I'll come to Chicago and do some improv and stuff. And that's where Flora and I met. And, we were in an improv group together that had a podcast. And after a while we carved out this last 20 minutes of every episode was, when it was called David Flora's Getting Out There. And we put this big echoey out there and we would talk about some, piece of Fortiana or paranormal or any of those kind of things. And we ended up both leaving that group. And after like a month, Flora contacted me. He's like, man, I really like that part. Do you just mind if we want to do a podcast where that's just we do that the whole time? And I was like, yes, I do.
Yeah. So and that's what we do. And so that's what we try to do with Blurry Photos is present these topics of Fortiana, these paranormal phenomenons, all kinds of ancient history, just, like you said, you guys do. You do a lot of the ancient sites. We'll throw in some mythology. And recently we've gotten into some, science, some physics. Mm-hmm. And we try to present the information with a lot of research as best we can. But since Dave and I just naturally like to joke with each other anyways, we try to make it conversational and throw in a few funny jokes. Well, I don't want to say jokes because we don't write any jokes out for it. We'll do a voice or something.
I would say it's like Abbott and Costello do the paranormal.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. That's perfect.
We love using jackass. That because that was actually somebody really hated our podcast and that's what they called it. They were like, Abbott and Costello do the paranormal? No thanks. I actually, you know what? I'll take that.
Yeah. That's a pretty good compliment.
Yeah, that's the reason I like your show so much. Is like you do the similar stories to ours, but you do it in a funny way. I mean, so much time is spent, and you're the same, I'm sure, doing research on these topics that it kind of gets old after a while, just reading and stuff all the time, and you like to take a break. But you guys present it in a way that I can listen to it, and I find it funny. And not only are you doing cryptids and paranormal things, but you're also doing like conspiracy theories. Like D.B. Cooper and Morgellons disease and some other things. What is your favorite subject, do you think, personally, that you liked to cover?
I like things that lean more towards science, like Morgellons disease. We did an episode on dark matter. Those are the things that I really like, where there is a lot of actual research being done into them, but people don't necessarily, somehow that information doesn't really filter out. So for me, a perfect episode is something when I think about it, it's something everyone wishes they knew more about, but no one ever goes through the effort of learning more about it. You would always wish you sat down at a bar next to someone who knew about this topic and you could ask them for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I like the more scientific things. Those are some of my favorite episodes.
Yeah. And to build on that, that's kind of, the overall point that we try to get to is, if somebody doesn't know about the topic, that's who we want to reach. We want to give people who think they might have, an idea of what we're talking about or what that subject is. We want to reach those people to say, there may be more to this that you might not actually know. That's coming across as kind of condescending. I don't mean to.
Yeah, we really like to look down our nose at people. That's what I like is the feeling of moral superiority.
Smarter than people. I came out real hard.
No, you guys do a great job of doing the history of a subject, which I really enjoy too. Because you got to realize that some of your listeners
may not be up to speed on that actual topic, and you guys do a real good job of that. So
that's a much better way to say it. Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You're hired.
That's kind of the double-edged sword for me, as I am not very articulate, and so I don't know why I'm doing a podcast. For me, though, for a favorite topic, I kind of like the mythology of stuff. Like I said, you know, that was one of the first things that got me into looking at this sort of thing. And I love going into the mythology of things. I love reading the stories, especially folklore and things like that, that do have a lot of good stories that you can also see that there is a lesson to be learned from it, or, you know, you can tell where it came from, as opposed to someone just, you know, sitting down and writing a fictional story out or something. So yeah. I really enjoy the mythology. I think probably Norse mythology would be my favorite out of that. So we've touched on quite a few of the Germanic traditions and the Scandinavian stuff. So
it's fun.
It's a lot of fun to read.
Have either of y'all ever had any experience with anything that like the, you talk a lean more towards the science save and all that, but I mean, like anything out of the paranormal or anything you've seen, anything like that, that out of all of your travels, both of you, have you ever had anything strange happen like that that's made you second guess what you were doing?
Truth be told, no. I really haven't. I think the closest I got, I had a dream once that was, like, I always remember my dreams, and they're always really weird. Like, they are just
He's usually
insane.
Shooting lasers and, like, sliding on ice
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, they're awesome. I have great dreams. But I did it in high school. I had some friends over, and I went to bed, and I laid in the same position I always do, and I closed my eyes, and it was as though I had closed my eyes for, like, just 3 seconds, and when I opened them again, I couldn't move. And I heard a voice over my back say, "We're here." And I felt myself move up off the bed back towards the door. Then something happened in the middle of the dream that I don't remember that scared the hell out of me. And then the whole dream ran in perfect reverse. I floated back towards the bed. The covers went back over me. I heard the voice say, "We're here." And then I blinked again. And I was in that same position, and I was in the bed. Everything was exactly as it had been in the dream, but I was shaking. I was so scared. And it was like, that's as far as I go. That's as close
that's
as
far,
I get
though.
To a
Yeah, that's
really
terrifying. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, yeah. That's a winner, winner.
I don't think I was abducted, but it was just a hell of a dream. But I think I think that's the weirdest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, I haven't had anything weird happen to me, and I'm pissed about it. I want something to happen to me. I want to have something that I can be like, I have no idea what it was, but it was probably a Mothman. You know, the most that's ever happened to me was, I think I was like 5, and I was asleep. Mm-hmm. This is sort of in the same vein, but I was asleep, and kind of something woke me up, and I feel like I saw what I, in my mind, remember as giants walking through the living room, and it was all dark. They were real shadowy, but it looked like there was a smaller one sitting on the shoulders of another one, and
there were circus giants.
They were probably circus giants, but I woke up, ran into the bedroom to my parents' bed, and jumped in and went to sleep, like, immediately. I don't know. But when I woke up the next morning, I went into the living room, and my mom was cleaning up something off the floor, and I was like, "What happened?" And she's like, "Oh, the ceiling fell in." And I looked up right in that spot where I saw these things, and there was a hole in the ceiling. So I don't know if I dreamed something and maybe saw the ceiling fall and thought it was a tall, shadowy humanoid, and it scared me, or if a giant was in there sitting on another giant's shoulders and went up through the ceiling.
Or you're just wrecking the house at night as you sleepwalk.
And my 5-year-old self just can't be contained.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting story.
The flying Melendez was in your house, flying through there and landing on each other's shoulders.
It was probably Kane and Rey Mysterio Jr. on top of it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, out of all the topics that y'all have covered, and like you were talking about, wanting to bring the history to it, which is what we try to do, and the whole thing, try to everybody get up to speed, like Kyle says,
have you changed your mind, either of you, on a topic that you thought you knew something about? Because I do it often where you know, you heard somebody parrot something and you're like, you go along and then you catch yourself, you know, repeating it or parroting it to someone else in your circle. And then you realize you look into it and you're like, hell, I was completely wrong. You know, and then you go to looking into it and you kind of change your mind about that subject. Has either of you had that happen to y'all so far?
I have. I definitely have. We spent about a good part of the first season of our podcast with me making consistent jokes about the Wiccans.
That's true.
I was just having a lot of fun mocking the Wiccans.
Poking a little fun.
Yeah. And so finally we're like, oh, you know what? We're going to do a Wiccans episode. Before we had released it, I forget how this got, we put something on Facebook about it and people were like, oh, here it goes. Stecco's going to really take him out to the woodshed now. And, you know, having done the research and reading about it, actually, I find it far less objectionable than a lot of more mainstream religions. Like, they don't get in anybody's face. They're not messing with anybody. They're not bombing clinics. They're not trying to keep me or force me to do anything. And so I was like, man, way to go, Wiccans. Yeah, right. You know, they've got their set of beliefs. It doesn't bother anyone else.
Yeah.
They don't do anything to irritate anyone else. They're just a lot of people that just like to hang out and they enjoy nature. What's wrong with that?
I can say I've never had somebody knock on my door and ask me if I've learned about the Wiccans today. So,
right.
You know, I'm with you on that. I can say that for fact.
Have you heard the good word? I'm like, no, I haven't.
Please tell me about the Wiccan.
Yeah. And
can I give you this pagan rule book and this dagger?
Yeah, for sure. I'm always down for free knives.
Exactly. If they're handing out daggers, sign me up. I mean, even if it ends up like Wicker Man, I'll do it.
Yeah, it's fun for a little while.
Bees! The bees! But yeah, so that was one that I learned a lot more than I'd expect. You know, exactly the way you said it. Like, I felt like, oh, I know what I'm talking about here, when I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
But everyone, I think then that's the thing with the way, the like we were talking about it before we started here, the internet and TV, like, everyone feels like they know about things. But when it comes down to it, like, I probably never did read anything about that. I actually don't really know anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. There have been plenty of topics that I've come to, and it's been great to learn more about and to get past that. Oh yeah, I know about this. I know all I need to know. It's great to get past that. I can't think of a specific one, but there's been so many where doing more research about it and presenting these topics really has helped me personally think a little bigger in terms of the whole picture about a lot of things. Maybe a good example would be something like, a lot of people believe the NWO controls everything. You know, there's a few people that are the puppet masters.
Well,
for the
Hollywood
world.
Hulk Hogan is a powerful man.
But I'm not here to say that's not true. I'm just here to say, you know what? To think that something that complex, where there's so many things that have to be covered up and so many secrets that have to be kept by so many people, that's a little suspect. Because something, not everybody can keep all that under wraps in that sense. So I personally, you know, when I would hear about the Illuminati, the NWO, I was like, oh yeah, that could happen. There's some sons of bitches out there that has all the money. Bah. But then it's like, well, one person or a few people, it'd be really hard to keep everything a secret if everything's faked. That just doesn't kind of add up. So,
well, I mean, the Colonel's managed to keep his 11 secret herbs and spices under wraps for a long time now. Right? So.
You think El Chapo would have been welced into that group? I mean, he had a lot of cash. Didn't seem to help him out any.
The group with the Colonel?
No, the group of the Illuminati.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the KFC. I'm like, what was it? El Chapo trying to invest in the KFC. Although, if he can keep 11 herbs and spices under the wraps, I would hide with the guy that's hiding that.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yes.
El Chapo, yum corporation conglomerate.
That's right.
Come into our fold, El Chapo.
Every single one of those restaurants has a bolt hole. It's got a little tunnel leading out the back.
Yeah.
What you don't know is what they put in that chicken. Cocaine.
They got to have. Yeah, right. That's how he smuggles his cokes and the flour of the KFC chicken.
That's right. I knew it was actually literally addictive.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, As far as the subjects and stuff, are there any topics that you just despise, that you hate, and you don't want to cover? Because here on Expanded Perspectives, there's a few, like me and Cam always talk about, that we're never going to discuss. You know, politics and mostly religion and stuff. We don't want to do that because it always ends up hurting somebody's feelings or ruffling some feathers, and we don't want any hate. Are there any topics when it comes to the stuff you explore that you just don't care for and you don't want to touch?
It gets tough. I agree with that, and especially for as much as we get into folklore and mythology, and we've covered some religions that I don't, you know, like Wiccans, paganism, Satanism.
Yeah, that's one of them that I...
Yeah, you learn a lot about them, but I agree with you 100%. If I can avoid like super charged religious topics, I do. Yeah. Because it is. It just upsets people.
Stuff.
And it's neither here nor there. And that's not why, you know, us or you are doing this, is to make people angry. I personally think I struggle most with some of the...
conspiracy theories.
Yeah, the conspiracy theories. Like, for example, one episode we'll never do is vaccines. Mm. Never going to do it because I will not even entertain the option that there's another side to it. that there is some reasonable manner by which people shouldn't be vaccinating their children.
Right.
So that's not a subject we'll ever cover. So I find myself, I lose patience with conspiracies more than anything, because there's so much energy and so much emotion poured into what is a lot of times just this giant towering pile of lies, you know, this large fake creation in someone's mind that requires so much energy. And it, yeah. So I would say for me, conspiracies.
Yeah. One of the tenets of our show that we've always stuck to is that we try to bring the kind of the B-list or C-list celebrities of the paranormal. So we're never going to cover Bigfoot. We're never going to cover Nessie. Area 51, you know, things like that. The big A-list celebrities.
Right.
All of Bigfoot's cousins. Sasquatch, Skunk Apes.
Honey Island Swamp Monster.
Yeah, they're Mouse all Monster. Fair game. Those are great.
Yeah. Yeah, the extended family is definitely in there, but we don't like covering the A-listers because you know they get plenty of play anyway. So,
yeah.
But me personally, I kind of shy away from UFOs as a subject, and I don't even know why so much. I'll look at stuff, I'll read stuff, watch videos. You know, I'm happy to discuss them if someone wants to talk about them, but I don't think I'll ever bring that as a show topic, you know, to Dave and be like, hey, man, we really need to do this. Now, having that said, there are specific subjects that I think we might get to, like Rendlesham Forest. Maybe we'll talk about that in the near future. And we've talked about what was the one just recently that was sort of UFO-y.
You got me.
We forget episodes as soon as we stop the recording.
and I'm sure you run into this too. It's so hard to draw. You can't draw any hard lines about what you will and won't get into because so many of these topics reach into so many of the other topics.
I think it was Flatwoods Monster, but that's not necessarily a UFO thing. That's more along cryptid. But it, I mean, an alien,
like a flying robot.
Yeah. But anyways, straight up like UFO sightings. Area 51 stuff, that kind of stuff I shy away from personally.
Right. Well, you guys do a fantastic job. Is there anything coming up in 2016 that Blurry Photos is going to be doing? I know that sometimes you make a guest appearances at conferences and things. Is there anything that you're going to be doing this next year that's new there?
Well, you know, it's funny. We're going to try to artificially generate some weird experiences. You know, as we keep going and getting listeners, we're trying to build our war chest to kind of fund some traveling expeditions.
Yeah.
We actually just went in December to the Bloomington, Indiana Krampusnacht Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. They have a huge Krampus night. They have all these guys dressed as Krampuses, and you can put on a sticker that says naughty or nice, and if you're naughty, they'll whip you with a birch branch. it was a ton of fun, and that was our first real Blurry Photos road trip.
Yeah.
But I think in the coming year, we want to do a few more of those. And
yeah, we'll probably be going to the Milwaukee Paracon for sure. We'd love to make it down to Texas and, and meet you guys in person and go to something down there.
Classic chupacabra hunt.
Right.
We got a few weird and wacky things down in this area.
Yeah, a few.
Well, that's cool. Tell everybody where they can find you.
You can go to blurryphotos.org. That's the epicenter. And that's got all of our past episodes on there. iTunes, we can't fit them all on there in the feed. There's only about 100 episodes on there right now. But all of our past episodes are in our archives on the Blurry Photos page. And we're at blurry_photos on Twitter. You can find us on the Facebooks at Blurry Photos Podcast. Same thing on YouTube, although we hardly ever do anything with
YouTube's a lot of work, man.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's great.
So, but I mean, and we should have said this before. I meant to say this right at the first of the call, but thank you guys for having us on.
Absolutely.
We are also big fans of your guys' show, and we're very happy to be able to come on here and talk to your fans. And I don't know. Give them a little,
our listeners loved having you guys on our show.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, we got a ton of great feedback from that. So,
well, it's all a big podcast family. It's fun. I mean, it's one of those things that we normally would have not ever got to meet you guys probably ever. And then we just brush elbows. We're like, hey, let's hang out and talk. And then we ended up talking for, I don't know, hours even before and after we recorded the show, much like us off air talking for 30 minutes or better before we ever started recording this. Is everybody? Yeah. It's just fun to get together and talk to everybody that has the same interests as you. It's one of those things that Kyle and I have discussed. We wish that we could put together in a place where everybody could get together like a big lecture series, or kind of like a big whatever you want to call it, just a big gathering of like a Paracon or anything like that. Where we could get all the different podcasters to come in, someplace to where it doesn't, where you're not going to have all these big lecture costs, where people don't have to pay $150, $200 a ticket, to where it's like, come on in, it's $10. Everybody just comes in, we hang out, we all take turns getting up and giving a lecture over our favorite things, answers questions, just get to meet everybody and get stories from everybody. The interaction that we have with other podcasters and listeners, I think, is what makes this the most fun of all. It's just the people you get to come in contact with from around the world.
I could not agree more with that. And you know, we're you know, kind of still putting this thing together, and as we get further along, we get to go out. When we went to the Milwaukee Paracon, or we get to go out and meet fans of the podcast, or just fans of podcasts in general. It is so much fun, and everyone has been so great that I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
And podcasting is still very young. It's still in its infancy right now. So this is only going to get bigger. The more people that get involved, the more people that listen and download and fall in love with their certain shows that they like, it's only going to get bigger. So it's one of those things, we're all a big family. Let's all just work together, get to talking to everybody. So it makes it so much fun. And we really thoroughly enjoy y'all's show. It is a blast. I get the biggest kick out of it. Dude, I love it. I love the whole thing. Is sometimes guys get a little too serious, and even in what we do, and even in this fringe topics of Fortiana, they get a little too serious. And this is the last thing that you should get serious in. This is one of those things that, I mean, when people start arguing and having speculation over speculative animals is the most insane thing that people can argue about. Next to flat earth, but we're not going to touch that right now because we're going to leave that for you guys. We're going to leave that for you guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Everybody, please go check out Blurry Photos. Dave and David, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you guys. So happy to be here.
Thank you very much for having us on.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Man, I'm so glad we had Dave and David on the show. Those guys, they cracked me up. I strongly urge every one of our listeners to please go over there and check out Blurry Photos. I think you're going to like it. Like I said, they present stories much like we do, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. I've never seen another show that does it quite the way they do. I mean, even at the intro of every show, they do a little skit.
I like it because it's unique.
That's what I'm saying. That's my favorite. There's so many other shows, you know, and they gave mention to that there's a lot of other podcasts that do these murder stories and things. They want to do something different, and they're doing it.
They're definitely
now,
doing it.
Now, some people, they don't see the humor in it. They don't like the humor. They're like, no, you should treat these subjects serious. Well, if you're that kind of person, you're probably not going to like Blurry Photos. But for everybody else, I think you're going to find it entertaining. They not only bring forth good information, but they do it in a lighthearted and silly way.
And they're good. It's very good quality audio. it's where you, it's one of those things that it's almost the thing now to where audio is paramount.
I think so.
Quality, and it's finally, people are finally picking up on that and going, okay, we got to make sure we get our audio quality right. We're not just going to record it into a phone.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, there are hundreds of lousy podcasts.
Yeah.
Not just, talking about content, but just the quality.
The quality.
Like, oh, my Lord. I don't know how many seem to have like an interesting topic, and I'll go, and I can't get through 15 seconds. I'm like, nope, I can't do it.
I can't hear it. I know it's,
it's torturous.
Yeah. Well, Blurry Photos is not that.
No.
Those guys do a great job.
They are
great guys. Yeah. Kyle, I got something in closing that I want to talk to you about, and it come up on me, you know, like we always, there's always a list of stuff that we checked, and this just jumped on me, and I got to share this because of what it came out. Now, this does come from Cryptozoology News. You remember a few weeks ago we reported some people witnessed some sort of Neanderthal or something that they thought they had seen in Ireland.
In Ireland, yes, yeah. I do remember that.
There's another one now, too.
There's another sighting.
Another sighting from Northern Ireland. Now, of course, the one that they talk about that we first reported on came back from like the 80s. Remember, it was a couple that had seen it.
Right.
This comes from December of 2015. This was recent from Northern Ireland. It says, Irishman spots unknown two-legged creature in mountain range. It says a man says he has spotted an unknown creature walking on two legs in a Northern Ireland mountain range. The man, an avid hiker in his 50s, who chose to remain anonymous, said he was exploring an isolated area of the Sperrin Mountains in December of 2015 when he came upon the unidentified creature. Now, he told Debbie Crosley Hetswell, who's been investigating the Bigfoot phenomenon in the UK for years. Now, this is in the story. This is what he told her. Says, I had walked to three hilltops surrounded by dense forest and was heading back up a hill towards a tree line to my car. Now, this is when he claims that he saw a being behind him as he moving behind him as he approached his vehicle. Says it was walking, heading down the hill towards me on a route I had just taken, about 1 kilometer away. The area I walk in was wet, but no river, with some very marshy ground on my first hill near my starting point up past two forests. So it's, you know, you're not going to hear rocks kicking and all this stuff like something. And he says, the hill is known as Carnelly Westtop and is 505 meters high. The big thing was coming towards me as I left Carnelly Westtop and was walking towards Mullaghbane Summit. Now he says this creature, this is what he described it as, about 8 foot tall, walking on two legs. Now, he didn't talk about the color, it says, but that he added that the weight looked very large. I have been hiking since 2004, mostly alone and all over Ireland. I'm not easily spooked, but I did not hang about, as I am of the opinion, if it wanted to, it could have caught up with me easily. Now, he says, I had great visibility, and I know about the optical illusions and what lone trees can give when walking. I have pondered this for a while now, but I have no clue what it was to this day, as I see people on the hills and mountains at various distances. So you can tell. He's added up, and he's even set back thinking, okay, you know, what did we see? What have I seen? The whole thing. Well, Debbie, and it's, she says that she'd seen something in the 1980s. This is what she had to say about it. She said that when she interviewed the guy, he knows how people look from the same distance. And he just kept repeating that it couldn't have been a person. It was too big, and it walked through the swamps like it was nothing. Well, he says he's not completely sure what he really saw on that day.
Right.
But he says that most wild creatures are very cautious and secretive and rarely seen, which is true. He said, I would like to see camera traps being set. I don't know what I've seen, as I see deer and quad bikes on the mountain regularly, along with hikers, dogs, and runners, depending on where I walk. All I can say is the thing I've seen, for lack of a better word, was out in the open following a fence down a hill I had just left in the same direction, and it was moving fast on two legs. He said that he'd walked over 300 mountains in Ireland and seen things he could always name, but that this was something totally different. So they start talking about, and it started coming up in the comments and stuff, as Woodwose. Well, Woodwose.
How do you spell that?
Wood. Wose. W-O-S-E.
Okay.
It's kind of like a UK or an Irish term for like a wild man. So Carl Shuker actually did a little work in this. So I got to looking into this, and he actually has a story from 1936 from a team of foresters in Latvia. They said that they unexpectedly encountered an ape man entity crouching at the base of a tree. He says, when it saw the men, it fled rapidly, swinging itself onto the overhanging branch and climbing upwards with remarkable speed and agility to the very top. And when shot at by one of the foresters, the entity shrieked and crashed to the ground, where it was seized by men, who discovered that it was covered in hair and no clothing. And when it was taken back to a village close by, however, the being was recognized there as a farm laborer who had disappeared many years earlier, but he was now no longer able to speak or understand speech and was capable only of yelling gleefully when meat or fruit was placed before him.
Wow. It reminds me of the stories of Anna.
Mm-hmm.
How they talked about making her a slave,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, she would do mediocre tasks for the community.
And we don't really know. Yeah, it's one of those things you don't really know. Was she, you know, like they said, they tested some DNA and that she came from Africa. Was she a slave? Was she not? What, we don't know what it is. But it's almost like this whole Woodrose thing sounds like, when we were talking about Almasty, it sounds a lot like Wild Men. It doesn't really sound so much as a primate as much as it does a human being, like a missing link, well, like a Neanderthal or like something there.
Even the region you're speaking of, Latvia, I mean, it's the same place where Anna took place in the Caucasus Mountains. I remember there was a story of the Russian soldiers that mm-hmm. cornered some in a cave, remember?
Yep, they shot the one in the cave.
I mean,
yeah.
This is all taking place in the same region of the world, so it only makes sense that maybe there was a small cropping of these wild men.
Well, he even reports, when I say he, I'm talking about Carl Schuker, reports of a thing, there's an entity in Suffolk that was called the Wild Man of Orford. And it says it was during the reign of Henry II, so from 1154 to 1189. It says it was captured in nets by some of the sailors while he was swimming in the sea. Now, according to a description penned by a monk, Ralph of Cogshale, that the being was completely naked but resembled a man in every way, with a profuse and pointed beard, hair that seemed torn and rubbed on his head, and very thick breasts. This is brought back to the local castle and guarded day and night. He was unable to speak, did not display any sign of reverence when taken into the local church, and preferred eating fish raw rather than cooked. He escaped into the sea once, but eventually returned of his own accord. But when he escaped a second time, he never returned and was never seen again.
This truly is a wild man.
Truly is, exactly,
a
wild
man. It's a feral human, right?
It's the way it seems, yeah. So, there's some stuff that reports of, they even say, like, little troll entities there in the Cannock Chase there at Staffordshire, which we've discussed that. We've even talked to Nick mm-hmm. off-air about a lot of that stuff. But apparently there's some things that's been seen in that area, like some large creatures, some large, you know, bipedal giants. They said there was a Ben McDoo, Scotland's haunted mountain there, and he was, that's the name of the mountain, not a fella. And that he says, it says that there's called the Big Gray Man is supposed to be on there. And they give his height is 6.5 meters.
Man.
Yeah. Great big humongous running around up there. But when I saw this thing, I was like, it's hard for us to believe. I mean, we've received some great emails and some really great stories when we were talking about the Yowie. We had, you know, one of our listeners, and he did an amazing job of pretty much kind of clarifying about how it's felt about in Australia. A lot of these places don't have the crypto idea that we have. And I don't know if it's because they're really not there or if it's just because of how vast and rugged and untouched this continent was whenever people started coming and really, I can't say coming here, but let's just say basically establishing more of a living times here. The stuff you come across, I don't know. But it does seem funny how it always seems to fall back on more of like, very closely human related, almost like a missing link. It seems more and more.
That's the
more.
Stories you hear from these hunters. They didn't shoot because it looked too much like a person.
Yeah, looks like a hair, and it would. You would think like if it, and that also explains its ability to be extremely intelligent. A right. way to get away from things is it's just basically a wilder version of one of us.
I couldn't agree with you more.
So it's anyway. So folks, if any of you out there have any strange sightings that you've had in the UK, or know of any family members that have had some sightings, or even in Ireland or Scotland or anything like that, please send it to the show. Please email us. Please send us some messages. We would like to know about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you'd like to get in contact with us, like Cam's talking about, you can email us at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can go to the website expandedperspectives.com and click on the contact link.
and you can send us the message that way. Or if you prefer, you can call the show, 817-945-3828, and you can leave us a message of the story. And also, don't forget, if you like Expanded Perspectives, we do another show every Thursday called Expanded Perspectives Elite. And over there, we do all types of topics. Recently, we did the Pajaro Hombre, the Bunny Man, Dark Intruders, the Cursed Atoll of Palmyra Island, the Kara UFO Encounters, and as well as Hidden Treasures of the Third Reich. Let's give that a listen.
Deep in the Austrian Alps, early one morning in 1945, Ida Weisenbacher answered a knock at her door. The 21-year-old Austrian farm girl found herself confronted with a Nazi officer. "Get up, immediately," he told her.
"Sofort aufstehen!"
"Hitch up the horse and wagon. We need you."
"Anspannen den Pferdenwagen, wir brauchen dich."
Weisenbacher did as she was told and pulled the family wagon up next to the military vehicle. Soldiers then loaded heavy boxes onto the wagon. Each was marked with a series of letters and numbers that gave no hint as to the contents. When the wagon was loaded, the officer told the girl to drive it to nearby Lake Toplitz. Once she was given the destination, the need for the wagon became obvious. The road did not go all the way to the lake. Only the horse-drawn wagon could take the cargo over the final distance. It took three trips to transport the whole load to the lake. On the final run, Weisenbacher saw that the soldiers were out on the lake and that the boxes were slowly being dropped into the water. They quickly sunk out of sight. Weisenbacher wondered what the boxes contained, that they had to be sunk to the bottom of that deep, dark, cold place. What secrets did they possess? Let's start at the beginning. In 1933, until the end of World War II, the Nazis began organized looting of European countries during the time of the Third Reich.
There you go. If you want to hear the rest of that episode, you have to sign up for Elite. Signing up's easy. Just go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, and then click on the Elite tab. $5 a month gets you access to every single Expanded Perspectives Elite show we've ever done, as well as an additional show every Thursday. What a deal, right, Cam?
Yes, I have to agree.
The price of one coffee at Starbucks gives you all that.
It does.
So sign up. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening and following us on the show. You can write us a review on iTunes. That always helps. Please stay out of trouble, people. Be careful out there. Go check out Blurry Photos, and have a good week. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace.